Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
And Gabe, you and I obviously have a lot to talk about. We'll do that in a few minutes here. But first, we thought we would talk about a really, really important science story.
Mpox has been declared by the World Health Organization a public health emergency of international concern. That's high up there on their alarms that it's they sound out.
It's a lot of words. It really is. And it's hard to understand exactly what that means to you, the listener out there. How risky is this? I think all of us, when we hear an announcement like that, have basically one question in mind at this point. Is this the next big pandemic?
Science Unscripted.
My name is Bernd Salzberger. I'm the head of infectious diseases at the University Clinic Regensburg in Germany. And I'm specialized in virology and clinical virology.
Bernd, is Mpox, this new clade of Mpox, is this the next pandemic?
I don't think so. Mpox is infectious with close contacts, but it's not as transmissible as influenza or COVID or any other respiratory disease. So I don't think that it will get as big as that, although in Africa, the situation is quite dire.
The coronavirus evolved to have a reproduction rate of 2 and then 3, and then it was maybe 6 and even up to 10, meaning if I got infected, I could infect 2 or 3 or 5 or 10 people on average. Is that not going to happen here with Mpox?
No, that's two different reasons. The infectivity is much lower and depends really on a close contact. That means either a very close skinned contact or, in some cases, droplets. The virus doesn't really travel through the air, but it can travel with some droplets which you spit out, really. If you're talking very loud, if you're singing, and it's not like COVID, which is in the end, would really travel in very, very small particles over longer time and stay in the room so that people could much more easily infect it.
How do we know this at this point?
That we know already from the course of the epidemic right now. We have listed about less than 20,000 people, as I checked last. There will be some underreporting. There will be overreporting of severe cases and underreporting of less symptomatic cases. But still, it's now going on for some months, and look what happened with COVID even in the first weeks in the province of Hubei. So that's quite different. And we know from research that many of the infections were really transmitted by close contact with a lot of skin contact, and some in families, in households, but much less than we have seen with SARS-CoV-2.
Okay, so it's not going to be the case that I get infected and kind of isolate and end up infecting a whole apartment building. It's just not that infectious.
No, that won't happen.
How would I know that I've been infected? What would I see or feel happen to my body?
There are different things. You'll be running a fever, you'll be feeling sick, and after some days there will be an eruption of a rash or pustules on the skin, and you can get infected by close contact to infected animals and by close contact to infected humans.
Of the 20,000 people who have it, what do we know about them? What kind of people does Mpox infect?
In the beginning, there was mostly a lot of close skin contact, maybe even sexual contacts, as we have seen in the outbreak 2022, but it has now been gone over also to household transmission. That's children are infected as well, and so household transmission plays a role. Most people also have close contacts to their kids, or also skin contact. So we just really don't know what percentage what transmission route is taking. But it's always about close contact.
We've seen now with the case in Sweden that this does have the potential to cross borders. Do people, for the people listening to this right now, is there any need to worry about Mpox?
I don't think so. I think this disease or this virus can cross borders very easily. And infected patients may get into a plane and go everywhere in 24 hours, and the disease may come out when he's reached his destination. So I think there's a possibility for every country in the world, basically, that Mpox cases will be imported. But once the patient gets there, other people will know where he's come from. So that will be not missed, I think. There have been now also cases, I think, in Pakistan and in other places. And that is to be expected with the kind of travel we have today. But I think that these cases won't be missed, and these cases won't trigger a pandemic or an epidemic in the country where they land.
You're probably one of the few people I can ask this question. Wait, what is it about a pox virus that makes human beings get pustules and pock marks on their skin? What is that virus doing? I don't know if you can give me an image.
This virus actually does two things. It makes a systemic infection. It travels through the blood, but then in the end, it travels to the skin as well. And on the skin, the immune system attacks the virus infected cells, and that leads to the pustules, or it starts more with vesicles and then goes to pustules. Yeah.
And how does it kill people?
It does not kill people by the pox. It can kill people by, for example, inflaming inner organs. If you have a very weak immune system, like an untreated HIV infection, or you have to take immune suppressive agents because you have a kidney transplant, then you are more susceptible against such an infection.
And with kids, I mean, they tend to have a pretty strong immune system, maybe a naive. It's naive. It hasn't encountered the same viruses that mine has.
Very small children, that's still tricky, because kids have the very small airways, for example. And if you have a swelling in the airways, then very small kids are quite in danger.
And that was Bernd Salzberger talking to us there from the Regensburg University Virology Clinic down in southern Germany.
He wanted to add, he wrote me an email after we spoke about something that we did not touch on, and he just wanted it said. Why do we worry, although there is no danger for a pandemic? With our current methods, we can see that even a pox virus, which we have always thought to be a very, quote, stable virus regarding its genes, can change within an outbreak. And he says, think of what happened during the 2022 monkeypox outbreak. These changes or evolutions could lead to a better adaptation of the Mpox virus to humans, making it more infectious or pathogenic and dangerous.
He is advising all of us to support a vaccination campaign, or in whatever form, or the negative way of saying it. Let's not sit back and just be like, oh, that's far away, and it's mostly happening in a place I don't live in. Hence, I'm pretty safe. Yeah. Hence, let's just go back to business as usual.
At the moment, 60,000 doses are on their way to the Congo region. There's also Burundi. Cases have doubled there within a week. There's Rwanda. There are literally millions of people displaced by the fighting between the Congolese national forces and the rebels in these refugee camps. It's a place where a virus could spread. And that kind of explains why the WHO would use such strong language. It's also spreading to other places around the world. Bernd said Pakistan, Sweden, there's going to be other places. It'll probably get to your country.
Well, yeah. Sweden recently. Thailand is the latest one. By the time you hear this, there will be more. In the meantime, you now know what to look for, or really how to assess how fearful you should or shouldn't be. In this case, it doesn't look like it's going to be the next pandemic. Mm-hmm. It appears as pox, as pustules, on your arms. I think that's enough to know for now. And if you have any way of influencing anyone on an international vaccination campaign, do that. But it's enough to just support it in theory and to be aware of what the risks are and aren't.
Anything to say on anything we've spoken about, su@dw.com.
And we're fully back now.
Oh, man, yeah.
We just had a talk about Mpox, and that is more important than catching up on what happened during the summer. Far more important.
Yeah.
But now we can catch up.
Okay.
Good to okay.
Should we do that right now?
I guess so.
Okay.
I mean, we can start with the emails, because we received so many emails over the summer, and Gabe...
Let me get this going first. Brent North wrote, Brent, he literally visited us.
Well,
or tried to. He was in Cologne this summer, and we were gone. I was in Norway.
Yeah.
You weren't here in Austria or something?
I was in Austria. You had left for Norway, and Brent was close by in Cologne, Germany.
Yeah.
And it killed me that he was that close and we couldn't see him. Sorry, Brent. I would have traveled to Cologne to see him.
He plays the piano, and I played last week. Edvard Grieg is a Norwegian composer, and at the end of the show, I had some time, and I played the concerto in A minor. Brent writes, said that recording was exquisitely beautiful, although it's not his favorite. He sent his favorite. And then wanted to know who that was, and let me just get this out of the way here. That was Alice Sarah Ott playing the keys. The orchestra was the Symphonieorchester des Bayerischen Rundfunks.
Oh, down in Bavaria.
The Bavarian
they were
orchestra,
playing that. Yeah.
And it was conducted by Esa-Pekka Salonen.
There you go, Brent.
There it is.
I didn't have a chance to hear that one, but I'll have to go back upstairs and listen to it soon. I'm going
to
read a recent email. As we've promised before on the show, if you have never written to us and then you write to us, we're going to read that on the show unless it's inappropriate to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And Robin's was appropriate. Robin writes, Connor and Gabe, I'm a new listener and just wanted to express gratitude for the show. The engineer in me is happy to find a podcast where I can learn more about the world from a science research lens. I've already made my way through several past episodes and recommend a few to family and friends. Thank you. And that's from Robin in London.
Wow, Robin? That's the kind of message where I'm really happy to be back.
Yeah.
It makes me really happy to be back
real,
at work.
No, but for real. Those messages...
That's why we do this.
Yeah, really, at the end of it.
In addition to, I guess, feeding our families and...
Well, we've talked on the show about, being paid money for your work does matter. that's part of it, too. You have another email?
Yeah, should we get going on the burglary emails? Because we got a lot of people writing in about that. And one of them is from William...
Well, real quick, summarizing what happened.
Yeah, they stole a lot of my wife's jewelry.
Yeah.
They were after the little stuff. I think I said that. Was it part of the broadcast? I haven't even listened to it. I didn't want to be traumatized by listening to that. I know you were there with the microphone.
Oh, you didn't even listen to
I have not heard any of it.
You haven't listened to that episode?
I didn't want to go back to that moment.
I understand that.
It affected me a little bit. It affected my wife a lot. It affected my eldest daughter even more.
Real quick, for the people who did not listen to that episode, it was broadcast during the summer. I understand a lot of you are on vacation and miss some episodes.
Yeah.
Gabe's house was broken into while he was on vacation in Norway.
Yeah.
And about 5 weeks earlier, I came home to my house at 3:15 in the morning, and I caught two burglars coming out of my house. I distracted them.
Red-handed or red-footed. They had an electric bike.
And a hoverboard.
And a hoverboard.
And I got them. I talked to them long enough that the police came and arrested them. And we went with a detective, Roland was his name, to your house?
I had to fly back from Bergen, Norway, to meet with the Kriminalpolizei, the detectives in charge of this kind of stuff, and you were along with the microphone as they went in to get evidence, to secure evidence.
Footprints, possible DNA. Yeah. They didn't think fingerprints because they were probably wearing gloves.
They had gloves on, but if they had touched their face, then they could maybe extract that DNA from the glove print. They're still working on that.
Okay.
Great work done by, what was his name again?
I had his business card in my wallet all summer.
Detective.
Roland something. It doesn't matter, really, for most people out there. But I guess I don't know any more.
Steinke.
Yes. I don't know any more than what happened when you left to go back to Norway.
Yeah. They didn't take any of the stuff that I thought was valuable. They got a lot of my wife's jewelry. They stole the coins out of my eldest daughter, Ava's piggy bank. It's messing with Ava's head. She, for a while, wasn't sleeping in her room. My wife wants to leave, wants to move.
Well, that'd be one of the oddest reasons for you leaving the show. You got burgled and then you're gone, but I would understand it. And any updates from the detective, from Roland?
Nothing.
From the police? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay,
nothing.
So we will keep you posted. Like Gabe said, emails pouring in on this one.
Because yeah, William Zinn, you guys are amazing no matter what the topic. I love your show. Last week I listened to the robbery updates, which I found very entertaining.
Oh, that's great. Hopefully we can get robbed more often and entertain.
Although I felt very bad for you, as I've been through a similar situation, which never has a happy ending. You do an excellent job of entertaining and making things understandable and fun. Keep up the great work, and thank you from William. So that's cool.
Thank you, William. Ernesto, this is your email. He wrote to us from Bolivia, and he had a point that I had never thought about. Hi, Connor and Gabe. Just listened to the podcast about you being burgled, and I have to ask, do you think the burglars knew that Gabe was traveling and that's why they take all their time to go through the jewelry? Also, they didn't take tablets or other devices that can be easily tracked and just went for something they can sell fast, maybe? You didn't sound stupid in the previous interview. That's nice of you, Ernesto, because I thought we did. I thought we sounded really naive.
Hmm.
I mean, Yeah.
Well, we were.
He goes, you didn't sound stupid in the previous interview, comma. I mean, you kind of did. But everyone sounds stupid in retrospect to something, so don't worry. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work, and thank you for your hard work. Thank you, Ernesto. Yeah. I would love to see Bolivia one day. Never been down there.
Yeah.
You've seen a lot of things up there.
You tried to go around the world, didn't you?
Well, yeah, and then I met my now wife, so I guess that's a good reason for stopping that trip.
Great trip.
Last email from our longtime avid listener and what's the word I'm looking for? He emails us a lot, and we don't respond to every email. We only mention him once in a while, but we love getting your emails, Mark. Mark writes here, and this is true because I've seen pictures of it. I live in a cabin in the deep forest.
Mm.
He's in the rainforest, I believe, the actual rainforest. I can sit in the dark and see a fool with a flashlight for nautical miles and smile. Give me the dark any day. I become the predator, not the prey. Not like Gabe, doors agape. Streetlights showing criminals the way. I become a spear-carrying ape. Neanderthal.
Wow.
Mark. And the craziest thing about this email is he didn't write it after you got burgled. He wrote it before, when we talked about the science of burglary in February, 5 months before you got burgled.
No way. I love Mark.
Okay, so this is a science show. Let's get to the science. Some science real quick here. Gabe, you've got one for me.
You want to go first?
Sure.
I'll go first.
Sure.
Yeah. You remember I was saying that my wife wants to move?
Yes.
You
know why I remember that? It was 5 minutes ago that you told me that new information. And it was a big development in my mind.
The idea is back home, as in Wisconsin, as in the United States of America. And it's been kind of something we're discussing as a family. And my 12-year-old asked about whether there had been any shootings at the school.
How does she know to ask that question?
I think we've spoken about gun violence in the United States, but the fact that that's already on her mind, we're not moving there yet. And she's already thinking about gun violence. I found a study out of Rutgers University in New Jersey. They surveyed 7,785 people across the United States, 9 different states. So it's, have you been shot? Have you been threatened by a gun? Has a friend of yours or a family member been shot? Or has there been a shooting in your neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
13% of the people surveyed had been threatened with a gun, which is unbelievable already. 2% had been shot. This is absurd. There was a little laugh in my voice there, but it's not funny, obviously, but it's just incredible.
1 in 50 people.
19% knew a shooting victim, and 22% there had been a shooting in their neighborhood. And then they looked at what What did that do to their quality of life?
Can I just jump in here and ask, did they select not only the U.S. states with the highest level of gun violence, did they select the counties and then possibly the...
No, the survey was representative. So they weren't looking at specific communities where gun violence is particularly prevalent. It was Colorado, Minnesota, Mississippi, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Washington. So in the contiguous U.S. Mm-hmm. and also spread out really well.
Yeah.
East, yeah. West, Midwest, yeah. South. The question is, what does this gun exposure or shooting exposure do to these people? And there was no real difference between the most prevalent kind of exposure to gun violence, meaning there was a shooting in your neighborhood. It was just as bad, nearly as bad for your well-being, if there's a shooting in your neighborhood, as if somebody you know, a family member or a friend, was shot.
So the fear is equal. What is it? The amygdala, or the part of your brain reacting to potential?
Hippocampus, wherever those reptile-like responses are. Those are just as important when it comes to your overall feeling of being okay.
So are you kind of saying, you're asking yourself whether your daughter's fear of burglary, which just happened at your home, is more significant than the abstract and hopefully only abstract fear of gun violence?
It's already on my daughter's mind.
Yeah.
There wasn't a shooting in Beaver Dam, but it's already on her mind. These researchers at Rutgers, what they wanted to do was also study, how do you treat this? What is the treatment for it? And they couldn't get into that yet. That's coming next. But what they definitely said was that this means that if a shooting happens anywhere near where you are, that it will affect you. Mm-hmm. Possibly talk to someone about it, a medical professional. And if you're going to move, look into the statistics of the prevalence of gun violence where you're going to go.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't want to be there.
That's a good point. A little bit lighter topic here toward the end. And to begin with, I'm going to play what I think is one of the most famous romantic lines from a movie that at least definitely in the 90s. This movie is from 1996. Gabe, we'll see in a minute if you can place it, but it was something that everyone back then knew.
You complete me. And I just had...
Shut up. Just shut up.
I don't know this.
You complete me?
Never heard it.
Oh, come on. You know the other quotes from the movie. Show me the money. Help me, help me, help me, help you.
Oh my God, Tom Cruise.
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah.
Jerry Maguire.
Jerry Maguire.
A disaffected sports agent. He's frustrated with the what it means to be a sports agent. He focuses on one client to do it well.
Help me, help you.
Played by Cuba Gooding Jr. And there...
And he says it again and again and again.
Yeah. There, Renee Zellweger responding to him, kind of in one of the penultimate scenes of the movie, expressing his love for her.
I'm not sure I got that far.
You didn't... Okay, why listen to a clip from a movie from 1996 that it appears some people have forgotten? What Jerry Maguire, what the character says right there is, you complete me. Mm-hmm. And the way I remember this being received, at least in my pocket of the United States in the 1990s, was a really beautiful feeling or sentiment. Mm-hmm. You complete me. And it's on the list.
Meaning that you're incomplete without that love,
yeah.
The love of that person?
And, and that is on the list of items connected to this new study under the list of benevolent sexism.
Sexism.
And it leaves me wondering whether what we're listening to there that we all thought was so beautiful was actually sexist.
Okay. What's the argument?
Let me just get into the claim, the study's claim, which is that if somebody is sexist, they're more likely to cheat on their partner. In this case, it's men cheating on women. Uh-huh. What's new about this study is that's kind of obviously true if it's hostile sexism. If you think they're inferior to me,
yeah,
that woman over there, oh, she can't do this and she can't do that and she's worse than I. If you're hostile toward that person, then it's kind of logical, right,
that sure,
you would cheat on that person, yeah, possibly, or you'd be more likely to. Mm-hmm. What wasn't known necessarily was that if you're benevolently sexist, that the same holds true. Benevolent sexism is something that was kind of a new idea to me. It's that you use positive language, but you're still being sexist. It's like, in this case, just use women, and I hate to even repeat this nonsense, but it'd be like, she's, you know, she's delicate or fragile or...
And in this case, Renee Zellweger completing Jerry Maguire is what? She's an accessory to her, to his psychological wholeness?
Correct. And if you flip the genders there, or flip the sexes there, I think it becomes a lot easier to understand if she was saying, you complete me.
As if that's all Jerry Maguire was about, completing Renee Zellweger.
He's like a little pig that gets shoved, and now she's whole.
Got it.
It becomes a bit more clear. The other points under benevolent sexism, protective paternalism, men keep women safe. Mm-hmm. Gender differentiation, that you have different roles, and they're divided up, but only one of them is a powerful role. Mm-hmm. This is benevolent sexism. Now, where the study gets a little complicated... is again, the claim is that based on two different surveys, there's an association, a significant association behind being benevolently sexist and being more inclined to cheat on your partner toward infidelity. That is the claim. I went through the study and took one of the surveys and didn't like it. You're all welcome to go take this online survey. It is... I wish I had a Googleable name for it. Let me do that.
And what the survey is trying to figure out what kind of sexism you are?
Ask that again.
And the survey, what is it trying to figure out? How sexist you are benevolently or how likely you are going to cheat? Or
The first survey is just about how... Let me get into the survey right here.
Yeah.
Number one, many women have a quality of purity that few men possess. Gabe, do you disagree strongly, disagree somewhat? Disagree slightly or agree slightly, agree somewhat, agree strongly.
I'm right in the middle. I'm neutral on that one.
So disagree slightly or agree slightly?
I disagree slightly.
Okay. Women should be cherished and protected by men.
I disagree probably more than I did.
Disagree somewhat.
Yeah.
Women seek to gain power by getting control over men.
No, I disagree. Mostly disagree with that.
Yeah. We're going to stop there because it goes all the way to 11. It's not worth going through all these. Yeah. But you can feel some of them. I didn't like the questions at all.
Very
because, for example, one of them was about treating women with dignity and respect. Should a woman be treated with dignity and respect?
It's like, well, of course.
Men should too.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with anything. And so it gives you two numbers at the end of it. How benevolently sexist are you and how hostily sexist are you?
Okay.
And then what they did is they paired those findings with something called the intentions toward infidelity scale from -3 up to +3. How likely do you think you would be to get away with being unfaithful? How likely do you think that you are to be unfaithful? And they combined the two and said, look, there's an association.
Got it.
If you're sexist, and in this case, the sexism is men toward women, mm-hmm. you are more likely to be unfaithful to your partner, regardless of whether it's hostile sexism.
Okay.
You're thinking negatively about them.
Regardless.
Or benevolent sexism. You're thinking positively about them, but you're still putting them kind of into a box, objectifying them in a way. And not treating them like the very real three-dimensional clunky creature that we all are, mm-hmm. right? We're all very different and don't fit into too many paradigms.
Yeah. And for all the clunky creatures listening right now, do you guys have anything to say?
And new listeners out there, keep sending the emails. We will read it next time.
Yeah.
That's it. Gabe, good to have you back. I hope you're here for a while. Well,
good to have you back.
True. We're back. SU@DW.com.
Science Unscripted. Motso mayele asali fize alongi sidate Yesu elonga kumamalelo. Hey Yahweh, hey Yahweh kumama. Hey Yahweh, hey Yahweh kumama. Hey Yahweh, hey Yahweh kumama. Hey Yahweh.
Yawa kumama. DW, made for minds.